Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to listeners across the United States and the world. My name is Oscar Crawford, and welcome to Conversations from Oscar Crawford Media. Today we're going to be sharing a conversation with special guest Rebecca Bennett, and we're going to be talking about why relationships fail in the 21st century. So I'm ready to get this started. I'm going to bring Rebecca in. Rebecca, are you with me? All right. Well, while I'm waiting to get connected to my guest, I will be talking to you a bit about our conversation we're going to have today. And we are going to be talking about why do relationships fail in the 21st century? Is there something going on more in the 21st century than at other times in the past? And there are a number of people who believe there are. So we're going to be talking about those. And if you would like to questions during the broadcast, you may do so by emailing your questions to OscarCrawfordMedia@gmail.com. And for all of you who email while the broadcast is going on, you will receive a free copy of the ebook, Fishers of Men, What Single Women Should Know About When Searching for Husbands. All right, I'm still waiting for a moment to get connected to my guest. Well, there are a number of things that people are looking at right now to examine why relationships are so challenging, and a number of things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about what is happening with the people called millennials, what's happening with them with respect to relationship. We'll be talking about whether technology is an advantage at this point or not. And we'll really be taking a look at who prepares men and women for relationship. Where does the training come from? How are we supposed to prepare ourselves? Or are we just supposed to learn through a series of the school of hard knocks? So we're going to be talking about those and some other things. Now, here again, you may feel free to ask your questions at OscarCrawfordMedia@gmail.com. And for everyone who emails during the broadcast, you will receive a free copy of the ebook Fishers of Men, What Single Women Should Know About When Searching for Husbands. All right, we are back. There is some difficulty connecting with my guest. I don't know that we'll be able to work that out during the hour, but we're going to go ahead and have this conversation, or I will just be talking to you about my perceptions of what is going on with modern-day relationships and why they are not working out so well. I did raise the question with you generally on who prepares us for a relationship. Is relationship just a hit-and-miss experience? Are we to get any training? Who is it supposed to come from? Or are we just observing life going around us and trying to model ourselves after what others do? Those are some questions that we can take a look at. If we look at our own personal experience, people from my generation, I'm a baby boomer. You know, our parents taught us very little about how they got together. They certainly gave us no details into their intimate life. And so we were all limited to what we could pick up from observation. Rebecca, are you with me? We were limited to what we could pick up from observation. And as we began to apply those things we thought we were learning, we either learned that they worked very well or that they didn't. Many times they did not. And we did not know that we had to learn people in order to make our relationships work. And that's one of the things that I want to say early on. We have to be willing to learn people and learn what motivates people as well as what we know about ourselves. We have to learn how to pair those two kinds of things together in order for our relationships to have a possibility of working. I have no idea why this is not working. Okay, we're going to try this one more time. Let's see who I have joining me. Okay, well, that caller dropped really quick. We're going to wait for them just for a bit. This is the first conversation I'm going to be joined with Rebecca Bennett. We have full intention of the next few shows we do together to become pilots for some work that we might do together over time by, you know, doing some 30-minute talk shows over the next month, and then increasing our broadcast time to an hour and maybe more in February and beyond. Today, we wanted to start off talking about the challenges of 21st century love and relationship. And I was going over a few things before I got cut off that have to do with how do we learn the concepts of relationship? Who teaches them to us? Is anybody responsible for teaching us how to do relationship? How do we build on them from there? Hang on one second. Let's see if I can get my guest in with me. Rebecca Bennett?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I am with you, and we are now together. I can't tell you how pleased I am. The best of technology and people sometimes don't work out as well together, so I'm going to take the blame for that. But I've talked about you a bit already, and I've talked about the work we're going to talk about. Would you just take a minute and introduce yourself to our listeners, and then we'll get right into the conversation we're going to share.
So Oscar and I met while I was in school. I took some classes from him that he taught, and we became in a lot of our thinking and experiences in life, and he has definitely enriched my future for the better. So I hope that we all can share our experiences and knowledge.
And friends, listen, Rebecca's being very modest. She's a very powerful woman that has significant influence in many circles where she lives, in and around Toccoa, Georgia. So we'll be discovering that over time. Once this personality gets set loose, you'll say, oh, my goodness, he was right. Okay, Rebecca, we're talking about today the challenges of 21st century love and relationship, and I was talking a bit about who is responsible for teaching us how to love, where do we get our models from, and if we're getting our models from a place that we see as we're growing up and developing, why aren't those models working in the 21st century? What are the top of your head thoughts?
The older generations were not very kind in sharing a lot of that. So I honestly believe we trial and error, figure those out for ourselves. And if you're the inquisitive personality and bulldozer such as myself, you grab that bull by the horns and run with it, discovering as you go with all the fun and flaws that come along with that craziness. Definitely my parents, being much older than the norm for somebody my age, were not very spoken when it came to emotions or what that interface in love was supposed to look like. So I come from a much different even mindset than most people in their 40s. Because life was more the June Cleaver, the Mayberry type experience for me at home. That was the interface between mom, dad, parents, that type of thing to us as children and siblings. So for me, it was very skewed coming into what would have been my own as a young teen, experiencing some very violent crime and instances that definitely warped my perspective on what was trust and foundational emotions and experiences going forward, definitely skewed a lot of that for me. So my trial and error became very broad-based and but yet very much specific to some very core things that just kind of naturally come to people. So I had to learn to trust again. I had to learn to interact and interface with people in scenarios that made me feel safe, and I had to pretty much generate that safety for myself. So I think
okay.
A lot as life. Sorry.
No, I understand.
Are you there?
I think I should. No, I'm still with you. Hello. We're still connected. Okay. So what's happening is I share much of that with you, where I grew up in the rural South, 50s and 60s. Things were ultra-conservative, and so adults were not talking to young people about their intimate development or their emotional lives. And so I agree with you. It was a hunt and peck, grow up by luck, and you learn the hard way. If something worked, it worked. You tried it again. If it didn't, you didn't. And nobody really taught us how to get to know people, to know what worked for them, that worked for us, so that we could grow together. How do you think that's affecting what the people now call the millennials? Millennials tend to expect things to happen really fast or they want to bow out. How do you think they're really affected by how to learn relationship, or are they learning it?
They learn. I have a millennial myself. My son is soon to be 21 and headed into the military, so I see relationships for him very much in that light, and what I have seen him do and some of the things that he says. And luckily, he has a lot of old school in him, so he tends to be the oddball where he brings flowers and pulls out chairs and opens doors and things that women of his age go, you know, that's archaic, what are you doing? You know, I saw one girl in the interface there when he went to open the door. She was already halfway out the car door, and he kind of stood there with that look on his face like, why did you do that? Why didn't you wait for me to get around to the other side of the car? So in that mentality, it's not something she was accustomed to, so she wouldn't have known to wait for him to come open the door. And I think those are things that he learned that trait by watching uncles, by watching grandparents, by watching that interface happen. So he had that influence. And I believe millennials, as people have evolved, have lacked that depth that comes in that interface in connecting with people. And today they don't necessarily expect that. They want that independence, especially, you know, after the feminist move, women like that, being able to do it for themselves, type mentality. So they don't stop to think about some of the chivalry that was lost in the transitions through the years. I definitely don't ever feel like I've lost my independence when I have a man open the door for me. So I think sometimes the skewed thought gets a little lost in translation, and I don't know that the millennials know to even expect some of that, because it's something that has not been done for so long that when they find it or when they see it, it's an odd interface for them to have to cope and become okay with.
Okay, so I'm with you. It sounds as if you're saying, and I think I'm in agreement with you, that the basis and value of developing relationships in the 21st century for the millennial is just not something that there's an abstract idea for. And so when there's no abstract idea for, everybody's back into the hunt and peck to see what works. I know yesterday I went into a sports store, and as I was getting ready to walk in, a woman approached. She looked like, you know, she just got out of aerobics class and all that. And so as I stood at the door, I looked at her. I said, is this okay that I open the door for you? Because I didn't want to go through any quack-quack with respect to opening the door, and I certainly didn't want to hear any lip about trying to do something kind. But I know everybody's different now. Everybody is motivated in different kinds of ways. So I'm aware that we have to be aware of people may need different things. I know that I still open the car door for my wife after nearly 30 years. But that's not the way people are doing now. That expectation is not even there anymore. Is that a value that should be maintained, or do you think that millennials are going to learn a better way?
As an old schooler myself, I think definitely it should be maintained. I enjoy it when I run into the occasional male that feels the need to open a door for me. I just have to chuckle and find that it brought a pleasantry to my day that I don't always get being a single individual. So for me, it is very much an embrace of fun and happy, and it brings, you know, definitely an aura of good positivity to my being when those instances happen. I don't know that the millennials expect it, so therefore the gap happens. They don't expect to receive it, and therefore they don't give it. So it kind of goes back to what have they seen, and what is their perception of what, you know, what do they really want? Do they really even know what they want? Because they're so used to an instant gratification, there's always, that grass is always greener in the next person that they meet. So they may find something that turns their head and they have so much more broad-based in front of them to look at, where old school, such as Brazil, we didn't have some of those options
sure.
when we were doing our hunt and peck. So I think the availability of what they have just so many other resources now, and the technology factor of it provides so much more of a girth to their experience to where they hunt peck versus what we have always
had
available.
Here's one of the things. I understand. Here's one of the things that's still a non-negotiable for me, and it's caused a bit of conflict for me and a few women that I've known over time. But if I'm walking with you on the street, I'm programmed, and it's out of love and respect, and I know people are not wired the same way I am, but if you're a woman and I'm walking with you, I must walk on the curb side of the street. That's in me. I don't want to shake it. It feels right, because here's the deal. Where I come from, the man who walked with the woman on the curb was indicating that she was available in the marketplace for whoever wanted to acquire her for a moment. And so, you know, that grew up unspoken in me because we all just were taught it and knew it. But, you know, I've been involved with a few women who weren't comfortable with that. And I would say, okay, then we're both going to be uncomfortable. And so here again, I think it's a matter of learning people enough to be able to meet them in the middle to make things work. Here's the thing that I think technology has done, and I have to be aware that I could be affected by this myself. Technology has suggested to us that we can have what we want in an instant, and if we don't get what we want in an instant, we change our approach to technology or use a different one. And with respect to courtship and relationship, you know, you've all but have something now touching you, to the point that I think people are saying, I don't want to go through the trouble of getting to know a real flesh human being, flesh and blood human being, because that takes work and it's dirty and I don't want to go through all that. What do you think?
Very much so. Agree 100%.
So how do we take that? You ever seen the movie The Demolition Man with Stallone?
Yes.
Okay, so
yes.
Sandra Bullock in here in the movie, and she says, hey, you want to have sex? And he's looking at her like, of course. And then so she puts this headset on him. And they're sitting across from each other on the couch, and he starts to have all these weird things happening in his brain synapses, because that's the way they do it then. But he finally throws that off. And when he says, hey, no, this wasn't what I had in mind. And she said, you wanted to really exchange saliva and touch each other and swap body fluids and go, yeah. So I don't know if that's what kids are going through now or not.
I mean, it happens. Being on a dating site and then somewhat perusing around what that looks like in the modern world, I find that I don't know that I ever would have thought that would have been the idea of somebody in a relationship. But a lot of them, that's all they want to do. Text, talk, more like call me up, talk dirty to me, and I'll do my thing and be done with it. It's less
right,
messy that way
right.
Because then when we hang up, we're done. I can walk away from you, and they don't need a name. They don't really need a face. They, you know, it has, relationships have become more introspective. They're about what I need, what I want, what I get, not necessarily what I need to give or what the other person needs from that. So the interface in it, again, has changed because the expectation is about more self-need gratification than giving. Relationships, from my perspective in my youth versus where my son is at, is for me a relationship was to give to somebody, and there's not
okay.
necessarily that it's let me receive it from you, and if I like what I get back, then I'll decide how much of me I'm willing to put out there to give to you. So it's kind of
okay.
In
listen,
reverse.
We got a couple of questions that have come in. Let's let you speak to the first one of them. This one comes from England, and it says, what should the goal of relationship be? We'll do that one, then we'll try to get to the second one. What should the goal of relationship be? What do you think?
I think you should gain a mutual agreed force of what both of you want. It has to be, you have to be 100% coming to the middle and them coming 100% to the middle and going, this is what I need out of it, this is what I want out of it. And that has to be something that you mutually can agree on. There has to be that base of nucleus there to build on, or otherwise you're always going to feel like you're not getting something, which will then at some point erode away to your commitment or your wherewithal to stay.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think that more than just our romantic love, spiritual connections, I think that's across the board. Because one of the things that I just accept, we are born into relationship and we do relationship for a lifetime without any education and training. But whatever relationships we are a part of, we have to know what our expectation is, what we want. We have to know what the other person wants. And then I'm with you. In terms of agreement, I think we have to negotiate what we want to agree to. I know that when I got married years ago, my wife Bonnie and I, we negotiated our expectations and what we wanted. And if there were any non-negotiables, they came up on the table. No, I don't do that. That doesn't interest me. And so the purpose of a relationship has to be what people want that they might negotiate and agree to. Now, the next question is going to take us a whole other way. This one says, and it's from Ohio. It says, how long should you stay in a bad relationship before you know it's time to go?
Oh.
Yeah.
My nemesis, right?
Well, all of us, we've all been through this one.
Unfortunately, I am the world's worst at probably staying far too long, only because my mere nature of who I am, and it's not necessarily even the relationship, but just my being, from everything I've been through, there's that need in me to know that I know that I know, gave it my all, that I did everything that I could before walking away to bring resolve, to find that mutual foundation again that we had to begin with or whatnot. For me, it's a personal thing that winds up almost being a negative for me in turn, because I stay longer than my emotions and part of my head tell me it's time to walk, and I know it's time to walk, but that ever elusive part of me that was broken so early says, did you do this? Have you tried that? You know, there's always that inner fear of me having a regret that I didn't do enough, I didn't try enough, I didn't do something. So it's more about my internal hardwiring that's a little skewed. And I would say I typically stay longer than I ever should.
I'm with you. I know that
probably not a great answer, but it's
no. I hear you. I think about I was married once before, and everybody in my family, you'll find this amusing, everybody in my family that ever got married stayed married forever. Like, my parents are married 65 years already, and they're still alive and kicking. But everybody had been married and stayed married forever except one other person, and I'm named after him. He'd been married 4 or 5 times, right? He married one woman more than once. And so I'm saying, okay, I can't let that happen to me. And I once said that I would live in hell before I'd see my family split apart. Well, I got my wish, and my family split apart anyway. So, I mean, there comes a time when, and maybe this is a negotiation we have to have with ourselves, what is my break point? When is it time to cut and forgive and get on with my own life? But that's always personal. It's always tough. And to the person who asked this question, there are no easy answers for this one. Maybe that's something we ought to talk about some more over time. Now, Rebecca, any questions you'd like to put out on the table? I know we're going to shortly be running out of time together, but anything you want to put on the table for now or think about we might talk about in the future?
Well, I want to add one thing to kind of just end on what you'd said about the Ohio caller's question. I think also the other part of that that makes us stay or not stay or whatever is that we often don't give ourselves permission to be happy. So when it stops being happy, we immediately kind of do like I do. What did I not do, or what should I have done better or different? You know, and there's that, okay, I got to work, I got to do. Rather than just be, sometimes it's just not right. Sometimes you just lose that connectivity to that person, and you may not ever get it back, but we're not very kind to ourselves in that respect, so we don't allow or forgive ourselves that essence to be okay with walking away, because walking away seems to, somewhere in our head, become skewed to I did something wrong or I didn't do something right. So it's a negative for us, And I think we have to learn to flip that, to turn that into a positive.
And, you know, the thing that it takes to do that, we acquire, and that's called maturity and experience. And if we can help people understand that even though the end of a relationship may be perceived as a failure, there's life after failure. I mean, many of our lives only begin when we acknowledge that we have or something that we were involved in didn't work out as well as we would have liked for it to. The other side of that is most of us are unable to define what success is in our relationships. And I got to tell you, I believe that that is different things at different periods in your connection. I know after being married 30 years, what was important immediately is not as important now. And there are some things important now that weren't important then at all. So it is a matter. All right, we got 90 seconds. So it is important that we are willing not only to reveal ourselves to ourselves, but to another person, and then have enough love and respect for that other person to find out what's going on with them. Rebecca, I have enjoyed every moment that I spent with you today, and the more that we're going to do this, the better we're going to get. Give us a closing word.
Love yourself. Be kind. It takes time, and that's not an easy thing to do, but you have to be able to love yourself first. Can't do it.
Yeah.
It'll make every interaction
for sure.
You have with somebody else bad.
The thing that I would add to that then is this, is that if one has the desire to be loved, one must love. And one can do nothing without knowing what they're doing. So I recommend to everybody invest as much of your you as you can in learning how to love. And you learn how to love the more you investigate how other people learn how to love. And from all of the information you begin to acquire, you can extrapolate that and put that into an approach that will make you a sweet connection for the people that you engage over your lifetime. I want to thank everybody who joined us. Thank you for your questions from England and from Ohio. We appreciate you. You will get the free book, Fishers of Men, What Single Women Should Know About When Searching for Husbands. We'll talk to you again soon.